You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Strowman on 97.9 The Hill. It's been a few months since I took a hiatus to bring you Cover 2 with Ron Rice. We enjoyed sharing our insights and opinions on professional football. But now the season is over. Congratulations, Kansas City Chiefs. But let's get back to what's happening in the world of sport business. As this show progresses, I will be interviewing local and national personalities and leaders who touch us through their programs, projects, and vision, all of them showing us the power of sport to make a difference. I have to touch on Black History Month, seeing how it is February, and the two biggest stories nationally and locally. Let's start off with Black History Month. It's definitely a time for me to check in on the progress of Blacks, of people of color in the world of sport. Not that I don't do it throughout the year. In fact, it's a part of my daily being, my professional work. But there is so much more attention from this, I guess you could say, a week that was started by George Washington Carver that then turned into a month. Yes, it is the shortest month of the year. Yes, it does cause some tension from people who are not used to hearing about what is going on in the Black community. But for the most part, I think Americans embrace it. It's woven into curriculums. And I think it is a great way for us to teach, educate, and learn more about the Black experience in the United States. So, yes, Blacks do play the game. But I ask, can we own the game? Well, there's no doubt it is a very self-selective fraternity to be one of those owners of the 122 teams of the Big Four, the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and MLB. Blacks still have a very, very long road to travel if they hope to gain economic parity, whether we're talking about the system, the institution of sport, or us as a country in all of the systems. Professional sports is very, very lucrative. And it is a collection of the old boys. Some not so old as others, but still it's the old boy network. And if you were a part of that party, would you let anybody in? At the very least, without a lot of scrutiny. So, the way it's structured right now, whether some would say that's by design or not, is that it's very, very expensive, obscenely expensive to buy a pro sports team. In fact, billions of dollars. And it's no surprise that many of the owners are actually CEOs, C-suite of the largest publicly traded corporations. Companies such as Microsoft, Amway, Carnival Cruise Lines, Walmart. We're talking billions, folks, not millions. In fact, lots of wealthy people can't even own sports teams. And so when you think about the history of our country, where your race determined your economic status, which still plays out today, at least that's what the research says, does it only make sense that it would be very, very challenging for a person of color, for a Black person to own a pro sports team? Think about the history of wealth in this country. 1619, when the White Lion, when that ship pulled up to the shores of Virginia, Port Comfort, to 1865, 246 years of chattel slavery, that peculiar institution where Africans, kidnapped and enslaved Africans, were property, they were real estate. And then from 1865 to 1965, Jim Crow, legal segregation, state-sanctioned, state-sponsored, where Blacks couldn't live in certain places, couldn't eat at certain restaurants, couldn't go to the library, couldn't attend certain schools. Your race determined your economic status. So for 346 years, or 87% of our nation's history, there were barriers, there was exclusion. And then here we are today, talking about whether or not someone can own a sports team, a person of color. So what do the stats say? Well, the three biggest United States sports leagues have just six persons of color as principal owners. In the NFL, there are two. Shahid Khan, Jacksonville Jaguars, he's Pakistani-American. And Kim Pegula, Asian-American, she co-owns the Buffalo Bills. NBA, three teams. Sacramento Kings owner Vivek Ranadive is Indian-American. Milwaukee Bucks co-owner Mark Lazary is Moroccan-American. And our own MJ, who owns the Charlotte Hornets. Major League Baseball, one team. Arte Moreno, who is Mexican-American. And of course, we see the media, we see the entertainment. People like to show the highlights. They show them sitting in the seats in the stands of those celebrities, those entertainers who've garnered a portion of a team. Celebrities like Will and Jada Pinkett Smith, Michelle Williams, Destiny's Child, folks, Kevin Hart, James Brown, the CBS producer, Derek Jeter, Grant Hill, Magic Johnson, Serena and Venus Williams, Mark Anthony, Jennifer Lopez, Gloria and Emilio Estefan. Yes, all people of color, but they don't have majority ownership. I love Dr. Richard Lapchick. He is a professor. He is a sports social activist. He is the director of the Institute of Diversity and Ethics in Sport at the University of Central Florida. His report cards come out every quarter. It's like a dashboard on how these teams are handling racial matters. The latest report on the NBA says that nearly 81% of players are people of color. In the NFL, 73% players of color. In Major League Baseball, 43% are players of color. We can play the game. When will we own the game? And lastly, two big stories. The death of Kobe, very, very tragic, shocked the world. I encourage you to check out the story on the tenement in the Philippines and how they responded. A very impoverished community. Very, very touching, very moving. And then, of course, UNC men's basketball. Excellence breeds expectations. And I say, often unrealistic. Remember, folks, don't let 18 to 22-year-olds direct your life. Cheer for the Tar Heels. Encourage the Tar Heels. But don't let it destroy your day, destroy your relationships. They're trying the best they can. You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Stroman on 97.9 The Hill. You're back. You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Stroman. It's time. It's kickoff. It's time for the launch of the Center of Sport Business and Analytics. I am very, very excited to revive, to give another kick to some work that I've been doing over the past 6 years at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. It's time to go to the next level. It's time to talk about, discuss, organize, connect around people and organizations creating value and equity in sport business and analytics. It's a virtual institute in the sense that not only will I continue to work with UNC, but also I welcome Duke, NC State, North Carolina Central University, and other local educational institutions and professionals in the entire Triangle region. I am excited, folks, and there's so many ways to be engaged. It's very, very important as an academic, as a professor, to teach theories, frameworks, principles, concepts in the classroom. But I think it's equally important to step outside the classroom. Knowledge is not power. Knowledge is not power. Applied knowledge is power. Applied knowledge is power. And so it's important for us to take all that stuff that's inside our head and see if it works in the real world. Does it really create a solution? Does it move the needle? Does it answer those really, really troubling and challenging questions that are out there? And we all know how sport is truly one of the most powerful mediums, powerful platforms to affect change, to affect positive change. So let's go deeper. Go deeper with me. The mission is pretty simple: to connect and advocate for people and organizations creating value and equity in sport business and analytics. My tagline is look beyond the score. I want to examine the how and the why of particular outcomes. The how and the why, not just the what. The history? Well, I played basketball up the road. Not that royal blue, but going up to the next state. The Cavaliers, the Wahoos, the University of Virginia. And then, as many of my Tar Heel friends have said, I woke up, I got wise, and I came to Chapel Hill as a graduate student and then as a professor. And with that love of sports and knowing how it changed my life, it helped me to learn so many valuable lessons, how to be a better person, how to think about team first, how to relate to people, discipline, teamwork, determination, focus, never quitting, all of that. That's my life experience. And so why not study it? Why not see if it can be applied to other domains in our lives? And so I had an itch to continue this work in a formal way, to create an institute. And thanks to some very, very helpful people, and one of the most influential and helpful persons in my life is Dr. Joseph D. Simone, that great chemist, business owner, innovator. He helped me to launch the center at UNC. When I made a transition in position over to Gillings, to the Global School of Public Health, continuing my leadership work, doing racial equity work, I could not let this go. This is who I am. And so here we are in 2020 with a relaunch to touch more lives, to make that mission come alive. The flagship program for the center is the Basketball Analytics Summit. I know many in the listening audience are familiar with it. 5 years and running, where we are examining how numbers, whether you are super quant or just curious about how numbers touch the game of basketball. Very clearly, we've got X's and O's, who should be on the court at the right time, why everybody's shooting the corner three, why getting to the free throw line is important, when to call a timeout. Yes, X's and O's matter, but there is so much more with the business of basketball. It's marketing. Why do you shoot out the t-shirts versus giving out a bobblehead? It's sports science. How do the athletes get stronger, faster, quicker? Load management. What about fan engagement and experience? What about entrepreneurship? That's what we do at the Basketball Analytics Summit. And this year it is April 17th and 18th, held on the campus of North Carolina Central University. Want more info? Send me an email, info@dstroman.com. But there's more to it than just basketball. Yes, that's my first love. But there's football and baseball. This year I introduced a Cover 2 football analytics seminar in Miami at the Super Bowl. Had speakers from the Jets, from the Dolphins, ESPN, The Athletic. It was a great time, lots of learning, lots to share. I'm going to continue in that space, football analytics. And some would argue that baseball started it all, sabermetrics. Moneyball. And so we're going to have a seminar with Minor League Baseball later on this year. If you're interested in baseball analytics, please stay in touch with me, the Center of Sport Business and Analytics. We're going to do it. Do it together. The mental health of athletes, along with my dear friends Ron Rice, my co-host with Cover 2 on this radio station, and Dr. Robert Turner, professor at the George Washington University, looking at the brain, neuroscience, how football players in particular are transitioning. We've got a new gig called No Shortcuts. We put on events at the last two Super Bowls. This touches my spirit around life after sports with effective results. Laser. I've been doing this for years, helping a select number of professional athletes transition from their careers. We put it all together. It's called No Shortcuts, looking at the mental health of athletes as they transition to the next level and when they leave the next level. And of course, racial equity in sport, they touch one another. And so with the Center of Sport Business, you'll be hearing more about race and sport. What I call SPARC, that strategic and purposeful athletics and race conversation or colloquy. Race and sport, it matters. We need to talk about it. We don't need to wait until a superstar athlete makes a statement. This is a part of sport. So, how do you get involved? Again, whether you're a corporate partner, and boy, do I have great partners, RTI, Oracle, SAS, Wasserman, and whether you're a student or whether you're a professional, hit me up, folks. The Center of Sport Business and Analytics, info@dstroman.com. If you only knew, 97.9 The Hill. You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Stroman. I want to close out talking about a concept that seems more and more popular recently around load management. Load management. It's one of the biggest misconceptions that it always means athletes playing fewer minutes. It's really emerged because in the NBA, people spend lots and lots of money for a ticket. And for some people, this might be their bucket list trip. To go to an NBA arena and see a LeBron James, to see a Jimmy Butler, to see a superstar, maybe your favorite Tar Heel. And then they don't play, or they play limited minutes. It's definitely the latest buzzword surrounding injury prevention. Well, there is definitely concern with how many minutes, how much load, how much pressure, how much risk you are putting on the athlete's body. And that's called load monitoring, as in you want to evaluate, you want to collect data, you want to better understand what is happening to the body with those demands during certain time periods, and is it important to rest? With the large amounts of travel, interrupted sleep patterns, and back-to-back games in the NBA, and then for your top NCAA competition, it is a grueling schedule for players. But I want to lift up the positive work that sports scientists are doing. They are not creating a culture of overprotection. They're not robbing current and future generations of robustness, as it's been stated. They're there to inspire belief, not create doubt. That's what these sports science folks are doing. Some people are alarmed at the number of suits on the benches for basketball. You see head coach, associate head coach, two or three assistant coaches. You see a sports and conditioning coach. You see an athletic trainer. You see a manager. You see four or five managers. There's more people in suits than uniforms. And yes, that can be disturbing. That is not a cool optic. But one can argue that they're there to support these players, and it's good to have so many people helping them. Yes, definitely worth a discussion, a debate, when we talk about college sports, college basketball, but they're there for a reason. And right now with load management, the evidence supporting injury prediction models is close to non-existent. But it doesn't mean we don't need to pay attention to what is going on with the player's amount of time. And in fact, it doesn't mean that soft tissue injuries will never be able to be predicted. With enough meaningful data, it may be possible in the future. So load management is important. We need to pay attention to it. Don't give up on your team. Don't get frustrated. Stay involved. If You Only Knew, with Dr. Debbie Stroman on 97.9 The Hill.